butt, Lord judgment. My own sweet time, did it teach what I found? Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told. Very nice to have you for a very special episode. I love this because today's guest is what I call one of the forefathers of the podcast. Such a good friend of mine, Jake Lures of August Burns Red, is on the program, a guy I just spent the entire summer with. So we got to catch up here, I mean, all summer long. It was just an amazing time. And the reason I call him one of the forefathers of the show, he was in the first 10, call it 10 episodes, where I didn't have a podcast yet. This was just a pipe dream. I had this idea of me, a lead singer, talking to other lead singers. That's what I've been doing for almost 200 episodes. And that was the idea. And I had to, you know, cold call some of my friends, some people I wanted to talk to, I respected. And some of them were gracious enough to accept this, even though it wasn't a thing yet. And Jake was one of those people. So big thank you to Jake for doing it again. This is an amazing episode. We talk about so many great things. We get pretty deep. But this is such a nice guy. Jake, just one of my favorite people, and I've been waiting like 185 episodes or something to get this guy back on the show. So I really appreciate you being here once again. We got so many other episodes, too. Just go back and listen. You know, last couple of weeks have been great. I'm just having so much fun. Thank you so much for being here. And of course, you can get in touch with me. I get emails every single day. There's a lot of emails lately, and I love it. I love hearing about it. And I think it's a good sign that whatever I'm doing here with the show is kind of working out. And I'm reaching people, and people are taking something away from these conversations, which, you know, is the whole point. So thank you, and feel free to hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. If you like younger people, they don't really get email. I literally had someone say this to me. I don't really get email. I'm like, what's there not to get? But I'm old. I'm a dinosaur. But I love email. So email me, or if you don't want to do that, you can hit me up on social media. It's at Shane Told. And the show we have at Lead Singer Sin and at Lead Singer Syndrome, depending on the platform, you're gonna find it. No problem. And also like us on Facebook. Go do that as well. If you really like the show, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. That's for, you know, people that are a little extra. They need more stuff. They want interaction with other fans of the show. They want merchandise. They want interaction with me. And that is what helps keep this thing going week after week, almost 200 episodes strong. So yeah, check that out. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And it only costs as little as $6 a month. And it's a good time. Trust me. It is a good time. Shout out to all my sinners all over the world. leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. So what's new with me? Well, I got glasses. Iconic.com. They hooked me up. That's EYECONIC.com/LSS. That's the link. They hooked me up. I needed glasses for a long time. And to be honest, I didn't really know how to go about it. I didn't know how this all worked. It was a little daunting. They made it super easy for me. They hooked me up. They can hook you up too. Even if you already wear glasses contacts, they got the best prices on the internet. They got a virtual try-on tool. That's amazing. Head over to iconic.com/LSS. You can use promo code LSS to take 10% off your entire order. They're an awesome new sponsor of the show, really supporting everything that we're doing here on Lead Singer Syndrome. So a shout out to them as well. You'll hear an ad later on in the program, but make sure that you check them out because this is the place. They got all the stuff, the best brand names at the best prices. What more do you want? Iconic.com. So I'm looking fly all over the world, doing emo nights in Denver, LA, Shout out to everybody I saw out there, man. Emo nights are fun. I don't know, man. I know this thing has exploded. I love doing it. It's fun just to hang out, play some tunes, reminisce about the good old days. So shout out to everybody that's seen me at all the emo night shows I've done, and I'm doing more. So, you know, make sure you poke around on my social media, and if you do see me around, come say what's up, say hello. I love when people come up to me and they tell me they love the podcast. That always makes my day. So if you see me around, come say hi. And Silverstein, we're going back on tour next year. We've announced 20th anniversary dates in Europe. They're on sale now. We got two shows in London. The first one's already sold out. Second one in London, UK is on sale now. And we're doing a bunch of shows in Germany. So yes, go over to silversteinmusic.com. You'll find all your tickets there. And now that summer's over, I know it's sad. I'm a summer guy, big summer guy over here. Summer is over. We're back at it. We're back at school. We're back at work. It's getting colder. And I know now festivals are in the past. So now you can worry about next year and these great club tours. And this one is not to be missed. We're going to be playing three sets. That's right. It seems like every tour we do another set. So we're doing Discovering the Waterfront in its entirety, an acoustic set, which we've never done before, and then a greatest hit set. So it's a long show. If you're in Europe, definitely check it out. Anyway, let's bring them on in here. And my conversation with Jake Lures of August Burns Red. Started. Jake,
yo,
what's up, dude? This is great.
Yeah,
I was just saying, like, this is going to be probably episode 188 or 189.
Yeah,
and when we did this thing, I don't know if you remember, it was 4 years ago.
Yeah,
Warped Tour. I hadn't even launched it yet.
Yeah.
So you were one of the guinea pig interviews that I did,
yes.
And probably episode, I don't know, 5, 6, something like that.
Yep.
And here we are, literally 4 years later.
Yeah.
Doing it all again.
I know, it's awesome. I'm super proud of you, man. Like,
oh, thanks.
I hear, like, anytime I bring up your podcast, people are just like, yeah, dude, I freaking love it. Like, it's like so good. And it really is. Like, you've just done such a good job with this podcast. And there's so many, you know, because, like, there's so many podcasts out there, you know, that I think really try to, you know, perhaps get the environment and the feel that you have in your podcast. And I think that you just did a good job, and it's really cool to even be back, and then also to know that you've done like 189 of these.
It's just
like,
crazy.
What, dude? Like,
when I say that number out loud,
insane, man.
You know, it's yeah, excuse me. No, it really is, like, it's totally, totally wild. But no, I'm glad we could sit down again, because I feel like a lot of things have stayed the same, but yeah, a lot of things have changed.
Yeah.
I mean, with you personally, I'd say a lot of things have changed.
Yeah, definitely. 4 years ago. Wow. Hold on. Let me think. So I was just going through a divorce at that point, 4 years ago. And quite frankly, I was a complete wreck, in total shambles. total shambles, dude. I mean, you know, divorce is just an ugly thing. There's no real way to spin it to make it positive, because it's literally like, I think there's some sort of statistics of like the two most challenging or difficult things for someone to experience is death of a close family member,
yeah,
or a loved one, or divorce, which is,
well, I'd say,
I mean,
absolutely,
it is death. It's separation and spiritual division and, you know, cutting ties with someone that you love. So that was a difficult time for me. But thankfully, I after a while of directing my frustrations and confusion towards, you know, just boozing it up and not really caring much about my life,
right.
I was like, hey, you know, you got to kind of change this because this isn't this isn't healthy, and like, what are you going to live like this for the rest of your life? So I ended up, you know, going to exercise, you know.
Right.
Exercise was really huge for me at that point. It was very therapeutic. It was like, you know, obviously, as you know, like, I'm a man of faith, of Christian faith. So, you know, I'd go in the gym, and it was a time for me to self-reflect on the mistakes that I had made, the decisions that I, you know, chose to make that, you know, hurt or damaged myself or my significant other at that time. And then for me to kind of hone in on, you know, hey, you know, talking to God and, you know, trying to have some sort of spiritual encounter, and understanding as to like, hey, what's the direction I'm supposed to take now, you know? And you know, that was to love myself and to love others, you know, and to forgive. And so that in my own life has really pushed me to go outside of the boundaries of my own comfortable boundaries of love and forgiveness, which has helped me to love people and forgive people that, you know, I normally or may would not have done, you know?
Absolutely. Well, what's interesting about all that, I think, and just comparing you now to Jake 4 years ago is you didn't even want to talk about the divorce 4 years ago. You were very, I feel like you were very guarded. You were very careful about the way you put yourself out there, the way you think, the things you said. Mm-hmm. There were things we talked about that you were like, you hit me up after, you're like, ah, damn, I don't know if I should have said that.
Right.
Now I feel like you're much more comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah.
Which probably has to do with, well, just getting older and maturity, going through the horrible divorce that you had to go through and piece together your life again. But also the way that exercise, you know, builds confidence in yourself too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think time and just healing, you know, I mean, when you're in it and you can't see 5 feet in front of you, it's like, you know, what am I supposed to say, or what am I supposed to do, or what's even the right thing at this point? Because, I mean, like I said, I wasn't treating myself very well. I wasn't loving myself. I wasn't in a place to really, you know, I mean, I do heart support, you know, I had to step down from that. I stepped down from that for like 6 months to almost a year, and told my right hand men, you know, like, hey, you gotta steer the ship right now, because I can't love anybody, because I'm not even loving myself. And I think the reason why I was so closed off about, you know, talking about my divorce is that, you know, people are really super judgmental. I got a lot of hate mail from fans, you know, after I publicly went out and said that I was gonna, you know, be separated from my ex-wife, Chris. And I really, you know, I called her before we even went public on that. And I said, look, I don't, like, the number one thing, even though her and I were, like, really at odds, I said, the number one thing is I don't want you to be hurt by, you know, my fans or by people that are in the industry. And I really want to protect your name because, I mean, whether or not we're agreeing or, you know, we see eye to eye, like, you're a human being. And, like, I don't want this to affect you. So we collectively tried to figure out a way to tell everyone. And then I got all this backlash from, and funny enough, from like Christian fans, you know, the Christians, the people who are supposed to love you unconditionally or say, hey, like, forgiveness and redemption is there for you. And all this, like, kind of came at me and was like, oh, well, you know, what happened to, you know, you know,
the sanctity of marriage, because a lot of that's really old school, right? I mean, like you know, you think back to when people in the, I don't know, 1950s or something, people like lived together and hated each other because divorce was like not on the table, like that was just not an option,
right?
And maybe in some cultures still to this day, I mean, I'm sure it is, So I think that that's a bit of an old school thinking, but at the same time, some of your fans are really. I mean, really holding on to a lot of the specifics in Christianity, right?
Well, I mean, I think the thing that irritated me so much was just the judgment and condemnation of it all. Not like, especially from people from afar that didn't really understand the dynamics of the situation,
of course,
and what my ex-wife and I were experiencing. But you know, because I still believe in marriage. I still believe that. You know, because I think it would be silly for society to get married And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, there's a few bad months in your relationship and you go, you know what? This person isn't serving me the way that I want to be served right now. Or, you know, they're just not, you know, loving me like they used to. And then leave and just jump ship. I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to build a family upon those types of that type of mentality.
Right.
So I believe in marriage. I believe in, you know, coming together and saying, hey, look, like, we're definitely going to butt heads, but we need to just continuously love each other by serving one another and working towards the same goal. Like, if, because we're going to grow, we're going to evolve, right? Let's try to evolve together, right? So, like, you know, let's grow together. And I think that the problem, you know, with my ex-wife and I was like, we just didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and
yeah,
we kind of chose not to grow together. And that's where it was like, okay, like, this isn't really working. But anyways, like, it's just taught me so much about loyalty and love and honor and serving someone else, like, not being as selfish or,
right,
you know, and picking your battles and everything else. So it was a horrible situation, but it really taught me a lot of the foundational tools that I needed to learn about how to love somebody and the way that they need to be loved. And then also boundaries and how to love myself. So that was cool.
No, absolutely. And I got to give you a lot of respect, too, for thinking about her and thinking about how the fans are going to react, because this isn't something that ever really gets talked about. But, I mean, being married or being in a relationship to someone, you know, in a lead singer of a band, a person that's in the public, man, that can't be easy once you break up. And there's going to be constant reminders. Like, who knows, you could be walking down the street and, like, there's an August Burns Red poster, or
right,
I'm on, you know, something pops up because you're in the public space and she can't do anything about that.
Right.
So I mean, that's not just a you thing. That's just with everybody, yeah, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm dating this beautiful woman from Finland, and, you know, that's even a challenge too with the long distance. And I feel hard for her because, you know, I feel for her because, yeah, it's long distance, and dating being committed to a touring musician is just a difficult road.
Yeah.
You know, it's a difficult road for my ex-wife, and I feel it's a difficult road for my girlfriend now, Yana, but she's just a tough cookie, man. She's just a real good, sensible, she's got a lot of peace, man, and it's great because, you know, touring is hectic. So then when I'm with her, it's like, oh, man, like, I can relax and I can be myself. And she just carries this sense of peace with her. And because of my, you know, because of the relationship that I was in, my divorce, I've learned to really be able to love her better, you know.
I bet. Yeah.
You know, be like, oh, don't make that mistake again, Jake. You shouldn't, you know, don't talk like that, or don't do those types of things, or, you know, be a little more aware of, to, you know, the fact of her needs when you're out here being this quote unquote rock star type of guy, you know, like,
right,
you know, so
you,
cool.
Do you head over to Finland all the time to see her? Does she come over? Is it that kind of schedule? Is there talks of her coming and living stateside, or what's the plan?
Right. Yeah. So right now it's great. I mean, she's got, you know, her life and a lot of really cool things that she does. She does, like, DIY clothes, and she's a photographer, and and she's got, like, multiple things that she has going on in her job. But so whenever I'm on tour, she's home, she's working and doing her thing, and then when I'm home from tour, I either fly to Finland,
yeah,
which is the plan after this tour. Literally, I'm going to be home for 2 days.
It's going to be awesome this summer. I love Finland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Finland is a gorgeous I don't know if you've ever been to a place called Jutsa. But it's a gorgeous place. There's a lake. She's got a cottage.
Oh, wow.
So we're gonna spend some time there in the
wonderful
water. And yeah, so in 2 days from now, from this tour, I'm gonna fly to Finland and spend some time with her. So
wonderful. That's awesome, man.
Super pumped. Yeah.
Well, the tour's almost over.
Yeah, dude.
Four more shows.
Yeah, insane.
And it's been a long one. And I wanted to talk to you, you know, the whole tour. I wanted to sit down and say, like, hey, I'm kind of glad we waited, because now we're able to reflect back on this tour, celebrating 10 years of Constellations, an album that kind of your second classic record, if anything, right? Which is cool.
Right.
And, you know, from an industry perspective, especially our scene, you know, as a lot of people know, Warped Tour has gone away from doing the national tour. So it felt like there was a bit of a, maybe a place to do a club tour in the summer, but typically club tours in the summer don't do as well. And this tour smashed.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Every single show, doesn't matter the night of the week,
yeah,
where we are, it's been really successful. That must make you feel great. It's really, making me feel great.
Yeah, it really does. You know, this is definitely a tour that I won't ever forget because of the magnitude, like the impact that it's made on me personally, watching so many people come to every single date and seeing the lyrics to a record that we wrote 10 years ago is like mind boggling to me. We've played larger venues than we've ever played before. We've sold out some venues that we've never sold out before. And the crowds are just showing up, and it's just been like, I guess, for me, kind of like reignites my heart for just with humility of like, thanks, right? You know, it's just like when you see something like this and it's so overwhelming to you of like, hey, you really have made an impact. Because sometimes I hear that all the time, like, oh man, your music, you know, has done this, or thank you for this, or thank you for that. And sometimes I'm so foolish to just, you know, say thanks, you know, and not really let it set in that it really has made a difference, you know, or I really am doing something that matters or cares.
Totally,
to somebody,
it's become a cliche, and that's the problem, because things that are cliches typically are real. They're true. That's why they're cliches.
Yeah, right.
But it's true when you've heard it for the, especially when you're doing meet and greets, when it's like the 60th person in line and they've said it and you've heard it like 8 times,
right,
just in the last half an hour, how can it really sink in the same way as if when you heard it for the first time when Constellations first came out or whatever, you know, or Messengers or whatever.
Right.
You know, I think that's just an honest human way that you perceive things, and it is, but it's good when it sinks in because it's important for your well-being, knowing that you make a difference.
Yeah.
And obviously with heart support and everything you do, that's something that you value.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's what's been going on is like every night I'm seeing a massive crowd of fans singing these songs, and they're literally just saying thank you, you know, for this. And so it's just, I think that this tour has just impacted me on another level of just, you know, being thankful and really seeing the impact that we've made as a band, and also brightens my future. You know, I mean, it would be one thing to do a 10-year anniversary and it completely flop.
Right.
And people be like, you know, it was great then 10 years ago, you know. Like, thank you, you know. But
well,
do you know?
Do you like doing the 10-year anniversary tours? And I mean, you don't have to compare it to a regular, you know, greatest hits kind of set. But I found that when we've done it, and we've done two of them now, two anniversary tours, playing the album from start to finish, and now you have done two as well, that it's a different kind of, it's a different beast, you know, because people know what's coming, but there's a cool anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they know what's coming, it's still exciting.
Yeah.
And sometimes even more exciting.
Yeah.
Do you find that?
I do. For example, for this tour, you know, before we went all out with our production. We've got
lasers,
cannons,
dude.
We got lasers, dude. Like, when you get lasers, dude, you're like, we got lasers, man. Like, you know, like you feel like a legit band or something. I don't know.
Well, yes, and you are a legit band, by the way. We're going to get to that.
Thank you.
Yes.
But you know, we're doing rehearsals and then right before pre-production for this tour. And it must have been like the second or third day of rehearsals. And Meridian, which is a song that has very little lyrical content. Like, it's just like me for maybe one or two lines.
Yeah.
And it's And usually we have Kevin, our guitar tech, playing bass for that song. And so we're doing rehearsals, and I'm going, man, like, it might be cool for me to play bass, you know?
So it was your idea.
Yeah.
Because this isn't in my list of questions. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So I was like, it might be fun for me to play bass. Like, you know, it might be cool for the fans to see that, and it'd be fun for me, like, maybe, you know, something different. And the band was like, yeah, do you want to do it? You know, because we don't have to do Kevin. I mean, Kevin loves it, but if you want to try it, you
know?
And I was like, sure, you know, like, let me give it a shot. So Dustin gives me a bass, And literally, we have tour. We start touring like 3 or 4 days.
Well, you used to play bass, though, like back in the day, right?
Yeah, I remember the last podcast
you mentioned it. Yeah.
I did play bass for like a 4-chord pop punk band, you know, which I never really like. Yeah, I mean, you know, I was like 17, 18. So this was, you know, this was a slight more of a challenge for me. And I know that I had to sing some parts. And so I just took Dustin's bass home for a weekend and I just played and played and played and played. And then, you know, 3 days later, we're on tour and I'm ripping bass on stage. And I was just like, this is so cool. Like,
yeah.
I'm like one of the guys now, you know, because like, you know, the singer's always like,
yeah.
There's the guitarist and then there's the singer.
Especially well with your band, because you guys are all like such, you know, virtuosos, instruments, like,
yeah.
You know, Matt's amazing and JB's amazing and Dustin's amazing and Brent's amazing, you know. And then you're like, well, I'd yell, you know.
Exactly.
And obviously, like, you're a huge, important part of the band. You're the face of the band. You're the,
all that
spokesperson. But it's true. Being able to instrumentally rip with them is probably a really great feeling.
It is. It is a really great feeling. It, like, for some reason, it brought this, like, sense of, like, bond with me and them. And I love it. And so, it you know, I mean, 10-year anniversary tours, like, we're playing songs that we've never played before. We're playing songs that we've never even been all in the same room playing together before, you know?
Right.
Because when we go into the recording studio, we're all recording what we've learned or what we've written on our own.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We've never been in a room, been like, okay, we're going to finally, you know, The Blinding Light. We had never played together before until we rehearsed it together, you know? So it's kind of a unique and weird feeling, and then to be able to play those songs live, and then, you know, fans, I mean, they're like, dude, like, The Blinding Light, you never play it on tour. It's like, yeah, dude, because we have a, you know, a ton of songs.
And we're going to get into that. Six albums you've done, yeah. Plus The Sledding Hill, and, you know, so, yeah, you guys have tons of stuff, but, that's really, really cool about the bass, and I love that. What was it like the first time you did it? Were you scared shitless? Like,
oh my gosh, dude.
Were you nervous? Did you feel prepared?
No, not at all. Not at all, man.
Because I always think the funniest part, whenever whether it's a new song or you're doing something new, like I've been singing with you guys doing Linoleum.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
And sure, like we sound checked it.
Right.
And you can rehearse the bass.
Right.
But then once you get out there, it's like, oh yeah, there's like people watching me and there's a show to put on. Like, do you have bass moves? Did you work on your bass moves?
I didn't. I honestly, the first night when I you know, put the bass on, I was just thinking, oh shit, like, just remember it's the third fret. Remember it's the third fret, right? And then oh,
write it
shit
on your hand.
Yeah,
the number
and then
three,
it's the seventh. You know, and so, like, you know, and I'm kind of looking around as to, like, Brent, you know, because he's close to me. And I'm like, and I'm kind of like checking Brent. And I'm like, Brent, what's Brent doing right now? You know, like,
right.
And then, like, Brent's gonna Brent's headbanging. So, like, I'm like, all right, gotta headbang. But I'm like, how do I headbang with this massive guitar? You know, like,
yeah, it's different. Sure.
Yeah. And then I think the moment where it was like, okay, dude, you're either the man or you're not the man, is when I had to get up on the mic and I had to scream something that's in 4/4 on top of the bass line. That's like, I mean, I still to this day, I don't even know the time signature where, you know, I've got to move to from a fret to another fret early.
It's like, yeah, I know.
It's on the up.
It's on, like, the up, kind of. Yeah.
And my scream, like, my, you know, is like on the down. I'm just like, oh my gosh. But after probably about a week of, you know, just realizing that I'm going to fail, you know, and that's okay, right? I got into it, and now I can go over to Matt, and I can flirt with him a little bit, and then I can go over here.
Yes,
and
you love the flirting.
I love flirting with Matt.
That's your band. So, you know, you talk about, I don't know how we just spoke about it. It was basically, you know, saying you're a legit band or whatever.
Right.
Well, congratulations on the second Grammy nomination.
Thank you.
Which, I don't know if you recall the last time we talked on Warped Tour, and then the podcast took a couple months to come out.
Yep.
Then you had the Grammy nomination, so I called you back to, you know, talk about that over the phone. I remember it was horrible audio quality for some reason. I think I had to use my speaker. But regardless, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
And it's kind of cool. it must have been cooler, even cooler the second time, because the first time it's like, oh, maybe this was one of these like weird things.
Yeah.
But now the fact that it's happened again, you've been recognized as an artist of this caliber.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be, I mean, does it surprise you? The mainstream has embraced your band? Because in so many ways, you're really not mainstream. Like, at all. You know?
Yeah. I don't, like, I mean, to me, it's odd. It's like, what are you doing? Right? Because the Grammys is such a, I mean, it's just such a mainstream.
It is. It just is.
You know,
entity. I mean, what do you want to call it?
Yeah, I don't
know. You're not on the radio.
No, not at all.
You're not on a major label.
Nope.
You don't really have singing in your band.
Not really.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Man. Like, it's just, it's really cool. I was your biggest champion when it first happened.
Yeah.
When it happened again, I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is like so good for, not just for you guys, but for everyone in this music scene.
Oh, 100%.
But it's crazy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have like a gimmick. We don't have like,
no.
You know, we're not walking around all wearing, you know, face paint and, you know, I don't know. I mean, it really comes down to the fact that they must just respect our musicianship. And that's like the coolest part.
Sure.
It's like we didn't get in there because I sing. We didn't get in there because of the face paint. We didn't get in there because of, you know, us being, you know, this super trendy band. We got in there because legitimately this band does bust their tail.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking about myself. I mean, really, like, JB, Dustin, Brent, Matt, like, those guys do not mess around when it comes to writing and, you know, really trying to go outside the boundaries of what they know as music, you know, and how they write. I mean, it's really cool, and I think it's great for our scene, for them, for the Grammys, you know, the Academy to look at us and go, hey, you know, this is a legitimate style of music. These are legit artists, and the world needs to see that and know that and recognize that. And so I'm thankful that they're doing that, you know, because there's a whole slew of amazing artists in our genre of music that deserve to be recognized, that are putting out, in my opinion, better music than a lot of the mainstream artists, you know?
Sure, of course. Of course.
And yeah, I think it's a really cool thing. And I you know, I'm excited to see where they go, you know, cause I mean, I think the last Grammys they had Between the Bear and Me, which is, those are our boys, you know, and they're super progressive.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are, if you want to talk even more outside the box of mainstream, you know?
Sure.
Code Orange. I mean, there's a ton of great bands that they're really admiring and bringing into the light. So I love it. And two times to be nominated for a Grammy twice is kind of like, what? Like.
Well, maybe next time you're going to win it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think there's a good chance. I mean, I know you guys are doing some writing on this tour. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys have been very consistent with your albums every odd year. Just like us, actually. 2007, 9, 11, 13, 15, 17.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like you're going to make this one for 19.
Right. No.
They're going to have to wait a little longer.
Yeah.
But with that and how you guys write, I don't think you're thinking about Grammys when you're writing music, that's for sure. It seems like you guys take kind of a natural progression approach. But how does it work for you? I mean, obviously, you talked about the four other members of your band taking the musical writing so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
When does it come time for you to come in and say, okay, I have these words, or I want to start working on putting over top, you know, my take, my expression into this? How does that work from the, you know, your songwriting?
Yeah. Well, so I see the band as a body. and everybody has their parts, you know, that they contribute for us to create something. And so my job.
So you're a body. Who's the dick?
JB. That's hilarious. And I love that I was so quick to say JB.
Well, somebody has to be the you know, the general of the whole thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And rightfully so. I mean, you know, that's exactly right. Like, somebody's got to be
General Dick.
Somebody's got to be the General Dick. And if we didn't have General Dick, we'd be running around with our heads cut off, right?
Right.
So he's a very important dick. And he does a great job being a dick. But, honestly, like, you know, it's my job is to convey. I'm a storyteller, you know, and I've got to be able to tell a story really, really well. And in order for me to do that, I really have to just completely be consumed by the lyrics and the music, both individually. Because what I have to do is I have to marry these lyrics and these songs accordingly, you know. So I've got to understand the identity of both of them very, 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 very well in order for me to be able to apply them together for them to make one piece. And that can be a freaking challenge.
Right.
Because we have lyricists and then we have music writers, right, songwriters. And a lot of times they're not writing the same thing, you know?
Sure.
So it's like, okay, I've got to understand JB's feeling in the song, and then I've got to understand Brent or Matt or myself's feeling in these lyrics. And what fits best? What's not going to get divorced, right? What's going to make it? You know what I mean? What's actually going to choose to grow together and make something special? And right. So that's my job in this band, and the way that I do that is just I really just get really heavy into the lyrics. I try to meditate on them. I try to envision myself feeling what, you know, their purpose and the meaning and the story behind them. And you know, we get like a lot of lyrics on the front end of the project before we start, you know. So I comb through these things, and I'm like, and my rules are: do I believe this lyric? You know, if I don't believe the lyric, it has no chance, right?
What does that mean exactly, believe it?
Yeah.
Like, is it sincere?
Right.
Because so much of what is music, and I'm not trying to take shots at any, I'm not going to take shots at specific artists, but this is running rampant, not just on the radio, even in underground music, is
right.
There's a lot of drivel, there's a lot of very ambiguous lyrics that's like, you read it and you can be like, I don't know, what the fuck does this mean?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? And
right.
In a way, that's okay
right.
When it's open to someone's interpretation and people can take what they want from it, and that's a beautiful thing about music.
Right.
However, if you're writing it for the sole purpose of it being ambiguous,
right.
Is that kind of what you mean? I'm putting words in your mouth a little bit, but
no,
is
no,
that
no. That's a good
kind
question.
Of what you mean?
Yeah, it's what I mean by that, like the two rules that I have is, you know, if I believe in it and if I believe that it's good for my fans to receive, right?
Oh, okay.
So like, you know, 4 years ago, right, you know, when I was writing lyrics for the record, all my lyrics were about pain, right? Because that's what I was experiencing. I could not see outside the box of pain and resentment and suffer, right? So
outside the box of pain. That's a pretty good lyric.
Yeah, right. So I couldn't get outside the box of pain, and so all I saw was darkness and dreariness and, you know, hate, right?
Yeah.
And so that's all I produced. So then I looked at all these lyrics and I go, "No. I'm not going to do this." And I shelved them. I shelved all my lyrics. I might have put out two or four for the band to check out and see if they liked, which I don't even think any of my lyrics made the cut that year for the album, because
Do you remember which album that was?
I think it was either Found in Faraway Places or it was Phantom Anthem.
Okay.
One of those. But, you know, I was in this place of just darkness, and I shelved all my lyrics because I realized that just because I was going through something that was temporal, I wasn't going to give that a place of authority to speak into our fans' lives,
yeah,
for much longer, you know, than what I was going through. Because, you know, you put something out on an album, it's on an album, you know, and it's there. And so I didn't want to do that. I didn't want our music and our lyrical content to be that way for our fan base. So I shelved all the lyrics, except a few, and we chose lyrics from other people that weren't in a dark spot. So when I say believe, I mean something that I connect with on a very deep level that I can see myself in, because I have to be in the lyric in order for me to produce something and tell the story as though I lived it, you know? And that's important to me, is that when you hear me screaming on a song, that you hear the sincerity, that you hear the genuineness, that you hear the authenticity of my scream, of my pain or my joy or my love, or desperation or passion, as though it's mine. It's me. I'm living it. I'm telling it because it's true. It exists because I experienced it and exists in my life. So I have to believe in the lyric. And if I don't, if I can't feel that, if I don't get there with that lyric, it's not going to make the cut for the album. Right. But I have to do the same thing for these songs. I've got to feel them. I've got to meditate on them. I've got to believe them, right? And what are they bringing up to me? What feelings or sensation or dreariness or sadness? Am I going to cry listening to this song? And then I have to make those come together. So it's a process for me that is very personal. It's very, very intimate. It's very private. But in the end, I believe brings the best product for someone who wants to feel something from a song, you know?
Yeah. That's tough, though, because when you're trying to, when you write something, whether it's, you know, negative or dark, or whether it's something that's being more uplifting, it still comes from a place inside you, right?
And 100%.
I feel like sometimes overall, everything that you do in your life, you're trying to convey a sense of hope, right? At the end of the day. But sometimes to make that message real and alive, you have to show those people that you've experienced the same things that they're experiencing too.
Right.
Right. So I feel like there's got to be both sides of it too. If you're just singing about, you know, rainbows and unicorns and flowers and stickers and yeah, all this lovely stuff, well, you're never really going to hit home on what the pain that people are feeling, which ultimately, hopefully, they can get out of, like you have.
Right.
And like so many of your other people you've helped with your foundation.
Right.
Heart Support have.
Right.
Right. So that there must be a challenge there too of, okay, what can I say? And I mean, you must go through this with Heart Support too. It's like, okay, how do I get people to connect to me?
Right.
Right. It can't just be, oh, I'm like a really happy person, so support me. It's like, well, I'm a happy person now. This is the shit I've gone through.
Right.
Or I've been through.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not a fluff kind of guy. I'm not like,
you're not a fluff kind of guy.
I'm not the kind of guy that's going to, you know, it's funny. When you're talking about, you know, rainbows and unicorns, I'm going, yeah, like Santa Claus, you know, like where Santa Claus is like, man, he's so great. And it's like, nah, he doesn't exist. Those presents, those are from your parents working their tails off, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all a lie. It's like, yeah, you're right. You don't want to feed people a lie. So yeah, there's definitely an understanding of the balance of writing to where it's like, hey, you know, this is the reality of it. And then there's the hope for it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, especially Brent, he's such a good lyricist. Like Brent writes just top notch stuff, and you know, he's really good at finding that balance. For me, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to figure out that balance. I'll weigh it, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh man, this guy's going in a really dark place.
Right.
And you know, and also I've no, oh my goodness, did you go for a run?
He's looking good.
Holy
no, you're good.
Your bald head with the sweat just beating down your head looks so nice right now.
That's amazing. They they headbutted.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are really going for the same look this tour.
Yeah.
Like I saw when I think it was like one of the first shows when you, Dustin, were doing the drum solo with Matt, And then afterwards, after the show, somebody was like, man, when Jake came out and played drums, I was like, I didn't know he could play drums like that. And I'm like, you know what? He can't.
We try to balance it out. You know, if Jake's wearing a hat on stage one night, I'll show off the bald head. One of us represents. We try not to have both represent.
I've seen the bald head on stage at the same time, though. I have seen it.
Just because, you know, I got to be proud, you know. But Jake had a really long beard. I had a really long beard at the start of this tour.
Yes.
I shaved mine down so I could have, you know, kind of my own identity. And then like a week later, Jake shaves his down and I'm like, okay, now one of us has to wear a hat.
Yeah, it was getting a little out of control where literally, like, it was funny because, you know, we have Ray Duker, who's just a phenomenal photographer, and he shoots us every night, and then he sends us the photos. And there were a couple times where I thought I was the one playing bass, because I play bass song, and I go, that's a good picture. That's Dustin.
You guys could do some amazing face swaps, too, I bet, and then everyone would be really confused.
Yeah.
I know JB used to be the king of the face swap.
Yeah, he was.
Back in the day, man.
He was. That's funny.
So let's talk a little bit about Heart Support while we're kind of on the topic.
For sure.
It's grown so much. You've been doing it for, like, almost 10 years now, which is the craziest, craziest part. And it's, you know, you said you stepped away from it, which I actually didn't know for a while, but obviously you're involved again now.
Mm-hmm.
It must be so rewarding for you to see and meet some of those people and have their stories come and now see what they're doing now with their lives that you've helped make happen. That must be really probably pretty emotional for you in some ways.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's a passion of mine to have started Heart Support and to build it. And I just like to see people get well. Because I think it's really important that right now, especially in 2019, where, you know, so many crazy, horrible things are going on in the world, and it just seems like there's no control, that we try to help each other just get well, you know, be the best person that we can be, so that we can make this world better for us, right? Like,
yeah.
'Cause it seems like no one's really on anyone's side, and everyone's so judgmental and condemning, and I just know from personal experience of all the mistakes that I've made in my life, the things that I've done to hurt people or hurt myself, and the moments and times where people have chosen, they made a choice to say, hey man, that was a shit thing that you did, but you're a human being and you messed up and I want to help you get better. You know,
of course,
those people in my life have been very few, but when I've seen them, I mean, they're my heroes, you know, those are my heroes. And
Absolutely.
So like, I've just wanted to not be someone's hero, but I've wanted to be someone who could cultivate an environment for a community of people to become each other's heroes and share, you know, and ultimately find the healing and a unique path of healing for themselves so that they can be the hero of their own story. And so that's what Heart Support really has become. It's become this platform of not the Jake Lohr show. A lot of people actually don't even know that I started it or even know that I'm involved in it, because we've kind of broken this, this boundary of the scene, and we're kind of going into the fitness realms, and we're going into all these other athletes. We're working with, you know, fitness guys, athletes, and beyond. And so these people are going, hey man, I'm seeing Heart Support through, you know, this band or this place or whatever. So it's really cool. And you know, the big thing I think for me is just that I saw an opportunity to where I could bring people from this world together to help each other to better understand other people's lifestyles and cultures and experiences and beliefs, and to try to breathe love, you know. And this is my effort. This is me trying to do that, right? So now we have resources that we've created, which I, if you want to hear me be proud, it's when I look at what we've created, and we're not just talking, about any, you know, we're not just talking about mental health. We're not just talking about, oh man, that's a bummer. That sucks. Good luck. We're really trying to make a change and cultivate this thing. So we actually have resources on self-harm. We have a book on depression. I wrote a book on my faith. You know, I don't think it's a surprise or I think everybody knows, you know, that faith is very important to me, that God, is a big part of my life and has really shaped me, because I kind of grew up with, you know, my father was not necessarily around all the time.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily connected really well with my stepfather, and I really wanted a father figure. I wanted someone to lead me. I wanted someone to show me, what am I supposed to be doing here? Why am I here? What's the purpose and reason for my life? And then God shows up and goes, hey man, I'll be your dad. You know, I'll love you and I'll show you what, you know, a man looks like, and I'll show you what you're here for. And I believe that I'm here to help other people get well.
Right.
And so it gave me, you know, having a relationship with God gave me a real sense of purpose and reason, so that I'm not walking around here aimlessly just doing life and then living, you know, or existing. I want to live, right? So
yeah,
this, you know, heart support has given me something to live for, not just exist, you know, here in Earth, and then that's it. So, I've gotten so much of a heavy response from people in the community, multiple times a night, every night. I have fans come up to me and say, "Heart support, man.
Yeah,
thank you for heart support. Thank you for that community, man." Or, "Hey, Ben Sledge from Heart Support. You know, your staff member Ben Sledge is an amazing writer. The blog he just wrote really helped me understand and reflect on who I am and what I'm doing." Or, you know, Nate Hilpert or Taylor. You know, and a guy came up to me with his family on this tour at our meet and greet, and said, "You know, hey, can you sign your book, Mountains?" And I said, "Yeah, of course. You know, thanks for giving it a chance, because it's a heavy book. I mean, I call God a fucking cunt in that book. You know, I get real, I get raw, I get genuine with my angst and my frustrations and my challenges of life and my relationship with God. And you know, it's heavy with, you know, scripture. And I challenge people to, you know, get spiritual. And so it's a heavy book, right? And not everybody's into that, and that's totally okay. But I wanted to share with people who did want to see what my Christian faith looked like, and the intensity of it.
Good.
I want to give them something, you know, to really see. So he comes back to me and he goes, "Hey, you know, I just want you to know that this book," and his wife standing there and his little son standing there, his young son standing there, and he goes, "I want you to know that this book has helped me become a better husband and has become and helped me become a better father." And that was probably the biggest reward to me on this tour, was just hearing that this man took my experiences and heard my stories and saw parts of my life, and it made him a better husband and a better father. Like, because I want to be a husband one day, and I always wanted to have a good father. You all right, buddy?
Oh, dude.
That shit really hit me.
I know.
It's
good.
Crazy, right? So but that, it's cool that at least that one book helped that guy, you know? And like, that's just huge for
me. But you know what? That one book helped that one guy that you've experienced, because he happened to show up that day.
Right.
You don't even know the impact that you've had, you know, all these other, you know, probably literally hundreds of people that are going through that right now, and you just don't know because they don't have your email address.
Right.
You know, or whatever,
thank
right?
God, I mean, like, you know, that's,
you couldn't take that much.
No way, dude. Like, yeah. I could barely take that dude saying that, you know?
Right.
And you know, it's just, it's me just trying to go the extra mile, and now it's not even, it's, you know, I lead it and I run it, and it's a lot of work. It's another full-time job, but
sure.
But it's the community that makes it special, you know? It makes it what it is. And so it's just really become a really beautiful thing, and I'm happy that it exists and that it's growing, you know.
I love it, man.
Yeah,
I love it. I love your honesty. I love that you've taken your own approach to what religion means to you, what your faith is, what Christianity is, and you've said, well, maybe it's not that conventional, you know, but I've found my own voice and I want to spread my own, you know, my own voice to people. And when people are not only listening, but also absorb that from you, how could you ask for anything more than that? That's an amazing takeaway.
Right.
And then that makes you not feel so alone either. Right.
Right. Yeah.
With how you, what you're experiencing. It's,
I think the most beneficial thing for me to have written that book was the freedom of saying, hey, this is who I am. And if you don't like it, go pound salt. I don't care. Because there is a lot of pressure from, you know, because everybody's like, oh, you're a Christian, you know? And it's like, yeah, I am. I love Jesus, but like, I don't know that, you know, you would believe or understand or respect my theology or my doctrine that I follow or the relationship that I have with God, because I feel like society and the church is a lot different than my authentic, intimate relationship with God, right? So like, it was just a way for me to show both sides of the street, you know, who I am with Christ. Hey, Christians, you know, like, you like it this way, and that's fine, but this is who I am with Christ.
Yeah.
And because, you know, a lot of people, they you know, unfortunately, we're human and we judge people, and it's like, when I was on stage one night, you know, this Christian's got his phone out. He's in front row, dude, and I'm up there, and I'll be honest, I'm very intentional with me connecting with God on stage. I love it. It's my place where I get to just be myself, and then I get to love God and just feel love, right? Like this blanket of love and peace when I'm up there. So I'm ripping and roaring on stage.
Yeah.
And this guy's front row, you know, front and center, and he shows me his phone, and on his wallpaper is Jesus, you know? And he's shoving this thing in my face. And I look at him, and I go, yeah, man. You know, that's cool. You know, like, Jesus is good, dude. I love God, right? Like, let's keep moving on here, right? So I keep going, do my thing. And then he throws it in my face again, you know? And I have a tattoo of Jesus on my arm.
Right.
So I lower my arm to, you know, his eye level so that he can see, you know? Right. And I'm like, I'm totally getting you. Yeah. Dude. I'm not sure.
They do this thing where they keep... Like, I know, and I don't get pictures of Jesus shown at me, but maybe someone will hold up something or like a picture of us together, maybe from a show on their phone. So I'll like acknowledge, I'll be like, I'll point, I'll give him a thumbs up, and it's like, okay, I saw it, now put your phone away.
Right.
You
know? Right.
But he keeps showing me the Jesus. Yes.
Right. So then after the show, I get off the stage and I'm shaking kids' hands at the barricade and saying thank you. And people, they're not even kids anymore. They're just grown adults at this.
We say kids. I know. It's not meant to be derogatory.
Right, right. And so he comes up to me. He goes, hey, man, why didn't you... he goes, you're a Christian, right? I said, yeah. He goes, why didn't you talk about Jesus on stage? And I go, well, have you seen us perform ever before? I mean, I'm not that type of guy, you know? He goes, well, I mean, isn't that your job? And, you know, like, isn't that your... Isn't that what you're supposed to do? And I go, hey, man, hold on a second. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you not feel the Holy Spirit like while I was performing? Because I did. You know, I felt God in the room. I had a connection with God. Did you not? I didn't know that I had to say Jesus.
Right.
Right. For Jesus to show up. Right. Okay. So, you know. I get that.
It's like a Bloody Mary or Candyman.
Yeah, right.
Say it three times in the mirror.
Gotta say it three times in the mirror, dude. Or he's a no-go, you know? It's like, why are we so quick to put... First off, why would you be so quick to put your God in a box and say, like, like you've got to... You know, and then why would you challenge me and try to put weight on my shoulders saying that I'm supposed to do something? Like, you know, if you want to see... God in my life, then you can see it through some of the other actions that I take, not from my words that I speak. You know what I mean? Why don't you see it from the point of view of a guy who's trying to love a community of people unconditionally, right? That's an act of love, right? What is God? God has a massive character of love, right? Like, I don't need to say anything to show you or to have God show up in a situation. I can just act it, right?
Sure.
So, you know, when I wrote that book and I was able to put that book out, it was like, look, man, I don't need your condemnation. I don't need your judgment. This is who I am. This is what my relationship with Jesus looks like. And I think everyone's relationship with God should look differently. You know, and
good.
And this is where I'm at. So good. Now I don't have to deal with
I
any
think
of this
that's
anymore.
A much better approach than saying Jesus on stage and saying this is the way it's got to be, and if you don't do it as I said, then you're not a real Christian or
oh my
whatever.
Gosh. That's so dangerous.
But that exists.
Yeah,
that exists.
That's hurtful.
And that's why there's different, you know, and I'm the last person to ask, but there's different, you know, sects and different things, and people
right.
believe different things. And
right.
I think if there was a little more, you know, respect for everyone's relationship, it's just it would be better overall.
Right.
Agreed.
All right. So I wanna. All right.
All right.
Enough
so,
with the Jesus
yeah.
talk.
We're like, holy crap.
Well, we're on a nice little run here.
Yeah.
I want you to shout out More Weight Clothing. First of all, give it a shout out.
Okay.
I love the designs. Who does the designs
for More Weight?
Yeah.
Oh. So I've got a couple guys. Kevin Schreckengoss, who's actually my roommate. Awesome dude, young guy, super passionate about, you know, graphic design. Went to school for it. Was working with Volcom and
oh yeah,
and,
oh cool, I can see that.
Cali,
now. Yeah.
And then he moved it. You know, he moved back to PA, and he's running his own company. So he's doing really great. He's super successful. And you know, Kevin Schreckengoss. You know, you can check him out on Instagram. And then we've got Zach Spurlock, who's a tattoo artist in Georgia,
nice.
And he does some of our work. So yeah, More Weight Apparel. I mean, that's. That right now is being kind of reworked, and I'm
yeah.
really excited for the future for
Sweet.
For that. But yeah.
No, I really like the designs when you kind of launched whenever it was a few years ago when you
yeah.
launched that company. I was like, oh, this is sick.
Yeah,
I
thanks,
like this.
Man.
If I was a little more jacked, maybe I could get away with wearing
Stop.
It. So we want to do a thing. We talked about this, and I think it's going to be fun. So before I let you go, I'd love it if you know. We're celebrating Constellations 10 years. You're able to do a little bit of reflecting back to that record. But, of course, you did a Messengers 10-year tour
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see if you would rank your records.
Okay.
So you've performed on 6 albums.
Yeah.
Messengers was the first in 2007, and Phantom Anthem is the most recent.
Yep.
So what do you think? You got a list? I want to
yeah,
hear
I do have
your
a list.
Favorite and your least favorite and why.
Okay. All right.
You can put them in order, actually, if you want.
Yeah, and no offense to, you know, who wrote it, blah, 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 you know, who produced it, whatever. I would say that Phantom Anthem is my favorite.
Cool.
Yep, it's my favorite because the vocals that I was able to produce for that album, you know, with Grant McFarlane was just, I mean, that's just the best. That's the best I have. You know, I mean, I've spent years and years and years working on lows, mids, highs, yells, emotional yells, you know, different types and styles of screams. And I've gotten to this place where I'm just like, man, I think I've fully matured, you know, as this is my identity as a vocalist. And these are my weapons, you know. And so I really get to kind of showcase all that I've done in the previous years
yeah.
on that album. So that's my
well,
first.
Well, the record isn't new. I mean, you know, the cliche right. thing is to say, everyone says, oh, like, our new record's our best. Like, everyone says that.
Right.
And I don't think that that's bullshit.
Right.
I think bands, if they don't believe their new record is their best, then they're doing it wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But the record's, you know, we're 2 years, at least 2 years old now? About,
yeah.
Or about 2 years old?
Yep.
So, you know, you're talking about you've had time to go back and reflect and think
right.
about the process.
Yep.
And for it to still be your number one record, that's a really good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's also
Grammy nominated, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, that carries a little weight in the back pocket, doesn't it? But you know, that album really also shows me where I'm going. You know, like
yeah.
the fact that like, man, look at where you've come from, you know, Messengers, right? Where it was like kind of a mix of like a tough guy scream and you know and all this and first album like legit album that
right.
I recorded with you know legit artists.
Well, because had you ever done a full length record before in
no.
any of your projects?
No, never.
Like that's the whole thing. People don't always really understand. There's a big difference between just like a demo or a couple song EP
right.
to like a full length record.
Right.
So, okay, okay. So if that's your favorite, do you have a least favorite?
Yeah, my least favorite, I think, and it's tough. I'd have to say...
Yeah, a lot of them are bad.
Yeah. I'd have to say Rescue and Restore.
Okay. See, I really like that album.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously, as a friend and fan of your band, my perspective is different than yours because you lived...
Right.
That's another thing. It's like, my least favorite Silverstein record isn't really as much because I hate the songs.
Right.
Or I hate the, like, lyrics or anything. It's more I hated the process of it so much
right.
that it's tainted.
Right.
Is that
yeah.
fair to say about Rescue and Restore, or is it more just the product?
Yeah, I think that I just didn't jive with the feeling of that record like I did with the others, you know? I just feel like it had this different kind of like spontaneous like crazy road. And I was just like, I'm not quite sure I understand like the path, you know, like
right.
For me, like I just didn't connect with that album as much as, you know, these other records. I mean, you know,
that's
I
also felt... when you were going through a really hard time in your life.
That's
right?
True.
I mean, that would have been 2013, you know, well, actually maybe the record after would have been
yeah.
more so, but I guess, I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I was definitely, I'm not going to say that I wasn't going through a tough time, but I think I just didn't really connect with the overall feeling of that record. And I mean, it's still a great album. I you know, like, I don't have a problem performing the songs or anything. I just think that, you know, out of all of them, if I had to choose, that would probably be it.
Yeah. Okay, what's the number two? What's in the two hole?
The number two.
Your favorite.
Oh, favorite.
We're going to go... So now we've got one and we've got six.
Yeah, okay.
And I want you to place the middle four.
Yep, okay. Messengers, definitely my number two because that was my first full-length yeah. album. It's got so much of me on that record. And it was such an epic moment of my life.
Yeah.
Where it was like, it was the beginning of something that I had no idea where it was going or what was going to come from it. But I knew that I wanted it bad. And so I really pushed myself from a novice to, you know, an actual ball player, you know.
Absolutely.
So I'd say that's my second favorite. I really love Constellations. To me, that was our first mature album.
Right.
You know, I felt like Messengers was kind of like, hey, this is what this scene's doing right now. This is what we can write. This is our abilities. We're kind of just breaking the surface and joining the club. But then Constellations was like, hey, this is who we are.
Right.
You know, so I really, really love that record. I
feel You're like not that sick was of it a, yet playing it.
No,
like
I love
times
playing
now.
That record. It's fast and just nasty.
It's a cool record, and I love the. Actually, it is fast and nasty, but I love some of the little peaks and valleys in there too, though. Some of the yeah. like the more, and those are the tracks that if you just go to an ABR show, you don't always hear those ones.
Right,
right. It's like a lot of bangers.
Right,
because you got a lot of albums, a lot of bangers, so you hear a lot of bangers. So I love when it's like. When, you know, you play this the song you play bass on and
yeah.
a couple of the other tracks that you don't always
yeah.
hear. And I'm like, oh, damn, man, this is a complete album.
Yeah, yeah, so. it's a ripper, dude. Like, I'm amazed as to how fast the songs go on, like, when we perform them. I'm just like, oh, my gosh, we're already, like, over halfway done here. And Meridian's such a beautiful break for me and just a real cool, in my opinion, just a dynamic song for the album, right? And then... there's Leveler. I guess that would be the last one then.
No, there's also Found
in Faraway Places. Sorry.
Places, yeah.
I like Found in Faraway Places. I think that's a fun album. I would say that's the more fun album of our albums because it's just like, you know, JB's just like, yeah, well, now we're going to do this thing. Like you know, and you're like, oh, cool, what was that, right?
Fun little parts, yeah.
Right,
little
yeah.
moments. Yeah.
Little moments, yeah. And, you know, that record we had just signed with Fearless, and Identity, I think, is a really strong song. You know, there's just a lot of meaningful songs on that totally. On that album for me personally that I think kind of changed. It was a game changer for the band, too, because this was right around the time where you know, we had chosen to not be, quote unquote, a Christian band. And then we wrote a record, you know.
Right.
And I think I was starting to see the effects of, hey, we're not going to write to a particular fan base, or we're not going to write with any type of intention other than these are personal experiences and this is us as a band, and where we are now. And I just kind of thought that that was kind of neat. So yeah, I love that record. And then Leveler is just a, that's just a nasty album, man.
So even your fifth favorite is still really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that record has Empire on it too, doesn't it?
What's that?
Isn't Empire on Leveler?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like got to be one of your most banging songs too.
Oh yeah.
Like every night live,
closer,
that's
dude.
Like the, that's the, like one of the best moments, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
great.
You must be really proud overall of all the records you guys have made together and what you've said and what you've done. And
yeah, man.
Like, you have a really solid foundation here.
Yeah, thank you.
So how many more you got in? Another six records in you? You got it? How are the pipes feeling?
Yeah, the pipes feel pretty good, man. I've been able to hone in on how to, you know, really take care of that. I'm very amazed, but yeah, they feel good. I mean, the body's a little rusty, you know. It's, well, because I'm not this, you know, 20-year-old teenage rebellious kid anymore. You know,
right.
I'm a grown 34-year-old man that just sees the world slightly different. You know,
I love it, Jake. Well, what else to tell the people? I guess the tour's almost over. By the time this is out, it will be over.
Right, yeah.
And you guys will be on to making a new record, I guess.
Yeah, we're heading to Australia with Constellations. And we're heading to, and we're going to do Hawaii. And then we're headed to Europe with Constellations.
Oh, so, you're doing the whole thing.
Yeah, we're just going to keep.
For some reason, I thought you were going into writing mode.
Well, we are going to be doing a little writing. We try to write throughout the year of the second year.
That's probably smart.
To just kind of, you know, get us prepared and ready, because, you know, we're trying to tour as well, and it's really not easy to write and tour. It just doesn't, it's not convenient. It doesn't really have the space, you know.
All right.
But yeah.
All right. Well, check that out. Europeans and Australians and Hawaiians.
That's right.
I love Hawaii. All
hey,
right.
Thanks,
well,
man.
Let's leave the people with a tune. Pick one.
Oh my gosh. Let's see.
Pick one
here.
And pick one and pick one and tell the people why.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? I think we're going to go with, ooh, boy, now another one just popped in the head. Oh, man. Ocean of Apathy.
Ocean of Apathy.
Yeah.
And why?
I love the energy in this song, and I love just the emotion that it brings. And whenever we perform it live, there's just like this, there's epic part.
There's
where
an
I just,
ocean of apathy in
yeah,
the crowd? I hope not.
There's just this part where I scream ocean over and over and over again. And I remember when I did this take, I told Jason, I said, look, man, we're going to do one take, and I'm just going to give it my all. So you can hear the breaths, and you can hear the intensity of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm performing it live, and I'm doing the same thing, and it reminds me of just the importance of being transparent and genuine in when you're recording music to make it the feel so that it connects with the fans.
Love it. All right, well, here it is. I'm Lead Singer Syndrome. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
Lost the sound, it's all so wrecked, lost.
So there is Ocean of Apathy, a classic banger of a tune on Lead Singer Syndrome. And I want to thank Jake so much for doing this once again. I mean, he's got a lot going on tour, you know? This isn't easy, this long, long show playing an entire record. So it was so nice to catch up with Jake, and I wish them all the best in Europe and all these shows they're doing. And if you're in Europe, again, and you're buying tickets for Silverstein, well, maybe first go buy a ticket to see August Burns Red do this amazing classic record. Next week, we'll be back. Got a great guest, an indie rock guest. I think that's what I'm going to put out next week. I'm excited. You should be excited. Hit the subscribe button. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. Tell someone about the show if you think that they'd be into it. And of course, if you really want to support it, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. And the link again for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. Well, he said it was the closer, so let's do it. Let's rip one more. Here is Empire by ABR on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next time.